From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says as of today, its COVID-19 program for cruise ships is no longer in effect. All of the major cruise lines had voluntarily enrolled in the program. They agreed to report to the CDC daily counts of confirmed or suspected cases aboard each of their ships operating in U.S. waters, and to follow CDC protocols for reducing the risk of transmission and managing outbreaks on board. On its website, the CDC says the cruise lines will continue reporting case counts to the agency, but the CDC will no longer share each ship's COVID status. Up until today, the CDC had been publishing a daily color-coded status indicating COVID risk aboard each ship. The system was imprecise, potentially grouping ships with a handful of cases in the same category as ships with hundreds. On its website, the CDC says cruise travelers can contact their cruise lines directly about outbreaks during their trips. Earlier this summer, travelers said cruise lines kept them in the dark during their cruises as COVID outbreaks spread on board. Cruise lines participating in the CDC program also had to sign agreements with the port communities they visit. These agreements lay out more protocols for reducing risk and managing outbreaks, with an eye on the impact outbreaks could have on those communities. For example, the port agreements in Southeast Alaska say cruise passengers or crew requiring hospitalization from COVID are supposed to go to Seattle for treatment. In Juneau, Deputy City Manager Robert Barr learned about the CDC's change after a KTOO reporter called seeking comment. Barr wasn't certain, but says he thinks the port agreements will remain in effect. The website Cruise Critic reports that the reaction on its message boards was mostly positive and that Cruise Line International Association welcomed the development. Most businesses in Southeast Alaska say a lack of workforce housing is hurting their economic outlook. For some, it's a major barrier to success. That's according to a recent survey of 440 businesses in the region. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
The annual survey looks at how businesses are faring in the region. And while they're generally optimistic after two pandemic years, the region still faces economic headwinds. In this year's survey, 72% of respondents indicated that housing is their number one problem.
We've just been struggling.
Jaylene Owen is with the Hames Corporation in Sitka, where a region-high 88% of businesses say a lack of workforce housing is weighing on profits. The family-owned company has several stores from groceries to gas and employs 150 people. Many are renters on a fixed income, and that's a big challenge.
There's just no place to rent. My employees were leaving me and telling me things like, I can't afford to live here.
At the worst point last year, Hames had 40 open jobs it couldn't fill. Owen says the corporation has tried to sweeten the deal for workers. They've given three raises in the last year and a half and might offer a fourth. They've also beefed up the employee discount, taking a hit on their own profits. But they're still stretched thin.
I have employees that are pulling 120 hours of payroll because they put in 40 hours of overtime on top of their 80 because there's no workers here.
I don't see a solution.
That's Scott Wagner, manager of NSERA, Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. It's a nonprofit that runs salmon hatcheries that supplement stocks in Southeast, and it's based in Sitka.
We have two different housing issues, I guess. One is we have this peak need in the summer, which is hard to find short-term housing in the summertime in Sitka. That's really hard. But then the long-term housing issue is employees, especially entry-level employees, being able to find affordable housing for the year.
NSERA employs 30 to 55 people, depending on the season, and they provide bunk housing for some of them. Wagner says he's running into the same issue as a lot of regional employers.
I'm trying to think how many times, we had a position come open, made an offer to somebody, and then they tell us a week later, you know what, I just looked into it, I can't afford to move there.
Housing isn't the only economic problem affecting the workforce. Affordable childcare is another one. The pandemic and inflation have also been a big hit to economic prospects. But housing should be a solvable problem, says Robert Venables. He's the executive director for the Regional Economic Development Organization, Southeast Conference, which commissioned the survey.
The housing shortage and challenges is so pervasive that it's impacting almost every single economic sector. It doesn't matter if you're in tourism or construction or healthcare or retail. Yeah, everybody is struggling not only for the workers, but a place to put them if you can find them.
It's a complicated issue. Most towns in Southeast are on rocky mountainous islands with limited road systems. There are only so many places to build. The region also relies heavily on summer tourism, which means more housing is needed for seasonal workers. But short-term rentals are also taken up by tourists themselves. Still, an answer to the housing problem is needed, says Venables.
That is definitely a challenge that has to be addressed if we're going to thrive as a region.
But so far, solutions are elusive. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Sarah Palin is leading the field in campaign contributions for the U.S. House race. The Republican former governor brought in more than $200,000 in the last 3 months. But not far behind is Democrat Mary Peltola. She raised $162,000 for the second quarter. Friday was the filing deadline with the Federal Election Commission. Republican Nick Begich raised about half of Peltola's quarterly total. But he has far more cash on hand than the other two candidates, $700,000. Most of that is from the personal wealth he's loaned his campaign. Those are the three candidates running in the special election to serve the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. Voters will pick the winner August 16th in a ranked choice ballot. That day is also the primary for the next full term in Congress. Other candidates in that primary include Republican Tara Sweeney. She raised $46,000 for the quarter. Her campaign total is dwarfed by an independent group working to promote her. Alaskans for Tara reports raising more than $200,000 for the quarter, mostly from Native corporations and their affiliates. In all, the independent group has spent more than $500,000 in ads for Sweeney. This year's Alaska Permanent Fund dividends will start hitting bank accounts on September 20th. Governor Mike Dunleavy made the announcement on Friday. Payments to those who submitted paper applications or requested paper checks are set to go out about 2 weeks later, starting the week of October 3rd. This year's $3,200 per person payout from the state's Sovereign Wealth Fund includes a $650 payment meant to offset high energy costs. This year's PFDs are scheduled to arrive a few weeks earlier than usual. And finally, a statue honoring the first climber to summit Denali will be unveiled on Tuesday in downtown Fairbanks. The heavy bronze piece had already arrived in town. KUAC's Robin got a sneak peek of the uncrating and installation of the statue of Walter Harper.
Jeremiah Howe worked to open up the huge shipping crate that held the statue. The rain had cleared recent wildfire smoke and had held off Wednesday, so the area in front of the Doyon Limited building was dry. Waiting for a lift truck to arrive was Bill Gordon of the Walter Harper Project. The statue is the peak, no pun intended, of work for the project. A committee of historians and relatives of the Athabascan Irishman who was the first to reach the top of Denali. Bill Gordon says the open area, looking over the Chena River, will allow people to get up close and touch the statue.
The committee, when we first put this whole thing together and talked to artists about what kind of a statue we wanted an interactive area, something that people can come and touch and be inspired by and enjoy in the whole area rather than looking up at a figure that they really couldn't relate to.
Walter Harper was a 20-year-old Koyukon man who hiked with Archdeacon Hudson Stuck, Harry Carstens, and Robert Tatum to the mountain in 1913. Harper is credited with the expedition's success because of his subsistence know-how, general health and athleticism, and his good cheer. His positive attitude was noted in many others' journals and letters in many parts of Alaska. That attitude of helping others was something the committee wanted to see reflected in the statue's design.
This has been built in order for visitors to come and they can actually step up and reach up and touch Walter's hand as if he was helping them up the mountain, which is what the image is depicting, is his energy that helped everybody up the mountain when they made that ascent in 1913.
John Thies and workers from his company, Worry Free Alaska, put straps around the heavy bronze. And the lift truck, run by Jacob Wright, pulls the whole thing off the crate and into the air. Sculptor Gary Lee Price, who already has other work in Fairbanks, did another piece to go with the main one that shows Harper against a wall of rock. And that piece is a dog named Snowball. Price wanted to show how important sled dogs were to the expedition. That piece also was lifted into place. A handful of 2-foot-high replicas were made by the sculptor, Gary Lee Price. There are also about 24 even smaller replicas, about a foot tall, that the project hopes will be distributed to some Alaska schools to enhance the teaching of Harper's story.
Our goal is to put a couple of Mary Erlander's books into every school.
That book is Emeritus Professor Mary Erlander's 2017 history called Walter Harper, Alaska Native Son.
We're in the process now of designing a curriculum for grade schools and high schools to add to their Alaska history the story of Walter Harper and the ascent and also all the other things Walter did to try to bridge the different cultures between the indigenous people and the advent of the Western culture that was coming into Alaska during his time.
After the installation of the Harper Monument and cementing Snowball the dog into place, the whole thing is covered by a tarp. The official unveiling is Tuesday afternoon at 4 p.m. at Doyon Place. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, July 18th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.